And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Patrick Mooney. You will have to subsist on only the two of us as Sahadev Sharma is somewhere between Los Angeles and Chicago in search of sleep and lost luggage. And it sounds like it was quite an adventurous return trip for him from, Oakland. For the Cubs, a much happier return trip, I expect. I mean, maybe they lost some luggage on the way too, but I think probably easier to deal with when you're coming off a sweep and a 5-1 road trip overall. I think I remember would have been this podcast last week, so not Monday's episode, but last Thursday, we were talking about this trip in general and sort of how playing the Dodgers is always tough, how going west is always tough. And I think I would have said, and probably did, you could roll the tape, but I probably did say, if they could split this road trip, I'd be pretty happy. 3-3, that'd be good. And yet here they are coming back 5-1, having beat the Dodgers, came within a foot of sweeping the Dodgers, and then swept the A's. And I think, you know, as good as it is to bank the wins, that's the most important thing, bank the wins. But you've got to wonder what the impact is of feeling like, you know, we might be a pretty good team. And we could talk about the fan perspective on that, but I'm also just curious from a team perspective that they've got to be feeling pretty good right now about themselves.
No doubt, Brett. I mean, I think, like, all this stuff matters, particularly after last season, in which I think Jed Hoyer's phrase was, like, we took hope off the table by early May, late April. And, you know, this team hasn't... I was just reading some of our coverage of the White Sox. Like, imagine if the Cubs started the season the way the White Sox have. The calls of, it's too early, we got a lot of time, would have rung extremely hollow. And, you know, I do think they've set themselves up to be able to weather that inevitable down period. And I'm with you. I thought 3-3 road trip would be pretty respectable. I even was talking to someone in baseball looking at kind of the Cubs schedule in April, and this individual was like, you know, the A's are the team you'd like to play later in the year. Like, they're a bad team that doesn't know how bad they are. But actually, I think everyone at this point now knows how, like, historically bad the A's are. But at the beginning of April, that could have been one of those sort of, like, trap series, and the Cubs avoided that. And so I think it'll be really interesting to, like, well, I guess see the forecast for tonight first, but just the atmosphere at Wrigley for a four-game series against the Dodgers with a little momentum in their sails.
Yeah, I think two things about that. One, had the Cubs not looked competitive against the Dodgers in LA, that would have affected the tenor of team and fan expectations going into this series at Wrigley. It sort of would have been like, well, here comes the team again. Damn it, they're going to, you know, outclass us and whatever. Now it's more like, now they come to our place, and, you know, this there might be a certain level of competitiveness between the teams. And then also the sweep of the A's, which by the end of each game, none were particularly competitive. I mean, that middle game stayed tight for a while, but, you know, the A's put nothing together and the Cubs won it later on. I think, you know, you mentioned a trap series, and I did think about that going into the series about how in years past, even when the Cubs were very good, you worried about those teams that were bad and didn't either, like you said, it's early and they don't realize how bad they are yet, or they feel like, well, we're going to beat this good Cubs team. You know, we're really going to step it up. And we would talk about like the Cubs playing down to the level of the other team and yada, yada. Well, this Cubs team isn't seen as like one of those really good 15, 16, 17, 18 Cubs teams. But you know what? They did in this series exactly what a good team does, which is not just that they won all three games. It's that they were the team that you look at and you're like, oh, wow, this A's team just can't keep up with the Cubs. Like, they're just completely outclassed. And that is how it looked. Now, to be fair, that's probably going to be the case in a lot of series this year with the A's. I was going to joke that the Cubs beat them so badly that they had to leave Oakland. Of course, with the news dropping overnight that the A's have committed to purchase a tract of land in Las Vegas, and it sounds like they're now exclusively looking at that as their plan going forward. But I do feel bad for A's fans because that was a team that was built to lose and save money and create even more energy toward a move, I think. But again, that is what good teams do. They beat up on teams like that. You know, what does that say? You know, you play 50-50 against the good teams, and if you just beat up on the bad teams, then it turns out by the end of the year, you're one of those teams that wins 90 games. And I'm not making that prediction now. I'm just saying that as far as that one series went, I felt like the Cubs looked like what a good team looks like in a series like that.
Well, Sade mentioned it the other day. Like, Jed Hoyer, this is what he goes to of the measure of a good team is blowout wins. Like, that is the most predictive measure from a front office perspective, that, you know, if you're playing a ton of close games, you're probably going to be about 500. Like, there's a couple bounces here or there, or maybe you have one total outlier season, and you're starting to see, that's what I was trying to look up here. I mean, you got about 5 blowout wins already, and I haven't compared it to last year, but they're starting to stack those up here. And obviously there's a nice cumulative effect on that of, like, whether it's confidence or not having to burn your high leverage relievers all the time, or giving opportunities to different players to allow them to kind of build into the season. So, like, it's hard to think of a better start. Like, this is not what we were talking about when the Cubs were Mesa. This is not what, like, we envisioned. And of course the Cubs were saying how confident they were, but there was a lot of question marks coming to the season, and not saying anything's fully answered on April 20th, but like...
April 20th, date check, still in contention.
Exactly.
April 20th,
but, you know,
date check.
And I'm curious, I want to kick it to you on this, Brett, of like, I am in my like day-to-day existence, like having people kind of ask, you know, like, are the Cubs any good? Or like, is this team kind of fun? Like, should I buy in? And, you know, just kind of unprompted, or I'm going to the game this weekend. Like, I feel like there is this sort of curiosity and a cautious optimism, definitely not full-throated enthusiasm, but at least some of the, like, just all-out anger has dissipated, and that, you know, the bar here for the Cubs running a business is like so low historically to get like fans engaged, and that looking back on it, it's really like sad how they squandered some of those opportunities. But looking forward, which is what the point of my question, like, how would you read kind of the mood in the room right now?
Yeah, I think you said it perfectly with curiosity. That's, I notice it in my, so there's two main groups of fans that I would want to talk about. So there's obviously there's the hardcore folks who always could see, I count myself among these folks, that were clear-eyed about what this season could be realistically, but did see that there was good process ongoing. Like, I do still think, regardless of this start, I would be saying the same thing even if they were well under 500. I would say I can see what the progress is organizationally, and I can sort of see what the philosophy is. But obviously they are winning. And so I think about there's two buckets of fans that can reach. And that's what I'm starting to notice. One, as you mentioned there at the end, are the angry Cubs fans. The Cubs fans who felt like a lot of the goodwill was squandered from the past era and who have lots of beefs with the organization, some legitimate, some not, in my view. And they are harder to pull back in, but they are getting that point. I noticed this in some of my text threads with friends and stuff. I'm not going to, won't name names, but I can tell from their responses to things and discussions, I can tell they're paying attention. I can tell that they are starting to ask and think about things that might be good. And that to me is pretty significant. The second bucket are the more just general baseball fans. And that I thought, you know, it's interesting. And this was something that Michael Cerami wrote about before the season at Bleacher Nation, is that what he was pining for, among other things, of course, we want the Cubs to be competitive, but as fans, we also want the Cubs to be relevant in the national conversation. Like it started to get really annoying, boring, it's a sinking feeling that anytime anything would come up nationally, the Cubs just aren't mentioned. And this is one of the major, you know, jewel teams of Major League Baseball. So it's pretty bad when they don't get discussed at all. And then I noticed, of course, this morning, Ken Rosenthal has a fantastic piece about the vibe with the Cubs at The Athletic. Make sure you check that out. And that makes me feel like not national media, but national fans. Fans who are just like into baseball, like a hardcore Mets fan, but who's also into baseball. They're the ones who are right now going to start to be like, wait a minute, are the Cubs, oh, are they kind of decent? And you start to maybe they'll dig in on, well, how are they doing this? And what's, and that is where I get a lot of my joy as a Cubs fan, because I love having those conversations with fans of other teams. Just like, hey, because I do the same thing, you know, with other teams that pop up and are interesting. I'm sort of like, oh, how are the Rays doing what they're doing? And I'm just curious about that. And so I have definitely noticed it started with, it's almost like the moment of the Nelson Velasquez grand slam. Through this A's sweep, there has just been this swell of interest. And 1 week is not enough to change hearts and minds. It can go away as quickly as a sweep to the Dodgers at home. And I would guarantee that many of the angry fans would be very loud and angry again. And there'd be some I told you so's and what have you by Sunday. But I perceive that interest percolating back up, that curiosity, like you said. And it's a hesitation to buy in. I even sense that still, by the way, among, like, I wouldn't describe myself as bought in on this year's team being this good. You know, I think there are reasons to believe they can be an above 500 team. And I think that's been reinforced in the early going. But to be quite this good, I'd need to see a little bit more. And I think there are certainly spots that we could nitpick with the roster that are not doing as well. But I tell you what, maybe I'll turn it to you on that. It's kind of hard to point to. There's one glaring black hole offensively, positionally speaking. But like, I don't know, rotation's been great. Bullpen's been great. Defense has been, the metrics, by the way, are unkind to the defense. I don't quite see it myself. I see the defense as having been quite good. But, you know, generally speaking, it's pretty hard to find the, oh, they're winning, but oh boy, it's actually pretty bad under the hood.
You know, I think, you know, the Cubs are a very historic franchise, and we've been following this for a long time, so there are certain reference points that we have. So when the Cubs say how great their farm system is, we can be like, well, only a couple of years ago you had the number one farm system, then you won the World Series. We know what it looks like when it's, you know, going full throttle. And then we also remember, I mean, 2 years ago, we were all writing about who the Cubs might buy at the trade deadline, and just the bottom fell out. So, like, these are very recent, prominent examples that are instructive. And now I do think, to your point, Brett, this team does have kind of a foundation underneath it in that I wouldn't anticipate an 11-game losing streak. That's also, like, really hard to do. Like, for even terrible teams, like, it's really, really hard. Yeah. But, you know, when you reference Ken's piece, and Ken is an amazing teammate and was texting Sahadev and I and is very inclusive with us and bouncing ideas off each other. And you know, I thought it was a perfectly timed column. You know, it's kind of what I told Ken. Like, it, you couldn't have, like, dropped this at a better moment. And that is something that players have talked about repeatedly, this idea that it's a closer-knit group with a lot of been there, done that experience, and that when the dips inevitably happen, because they always do, that this team is better equipped to handle it, both from a personnel standpoint as well as a team chemistry standpoint. Now, it's up to them to kind of go out and prove that, but what you're saying, like, yeah, the offense has outperformed our expectations. The starting rotation is solid. The defense is vastly improved. And we generally, like we said before, trust the bullpen. And you still have this layer of depth underneath at AAA Iowa that not only could help you get through the injuries, but could also be a really net positive as we get deeper into the season.
Sure, because you have that expectation that you're going to need. It's funny, you know you're going to need guys at some point, you know, starters, depth relievers, whatever. And it's funny, this year, I have to catch myself from being like, but I desperately want to see some of these guys. Like, I'm not rooting for injuries or performance issues on the big league team. You want it. You want these 13 to just keep performing perfectly. And sorry, but it's like, it is funny. You look up and down that Iowa roster and there are a lot of guys that I wish we could see. But, you know, that's another thing where it's sort of like, that's what good teams look like. They have more useful players than they can actually use.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I wanted to mention one thing that I thought was important from this series, and that was Hayden Wisniewski's start. Still maybe not, and he was harder on himself, I think, afterwards than anyone else would be, but still maybe not quite where he wants the command to be, and maybe different lineup. Maybe he does the exact same performance against a different lineup and they beat him up, you know, early on, and he doesn't make it to those later innings when he really settled in and was looking good. But what I thought was nice about it, in addition to all of the, it can help with his development, its confidence, all that kind of stuff, what I liked is the Cubs have had, as I recall, only two really implosive starts this year. There was the Drew Smyly game in Cincinnati, little bit of flukiness in there, but it was like, what, 7 runs over 5 innings. And then there was obviously the Wisniewski start last week that led to the Nelson Velasquez grand slam, but was really quite bad. Didn't get through 2 innings. What I like is both of those guys followed up their starts with really good outings. And we talk a lot about how the your team's only as good as your next day starter. And you talk about it's really hard to have an 11-game losing streak. Performances like that are what give you confidence that those two little truisms are actually true. That it is going to be hard for this team to, right now, as constructed, it's going to be hard for them to lose a ton of games in a row because they have a group of starting pitchers that are, even if they have a down day, they're right back to being competitive, you know, after that. So I was really heartened to see that. I think it's interesting to follow Kyle Hendricks' rehab. We've talked about him a bit, and he got to the point earlier this week. He threw in a minor league extended spring training game, a couple innings. I think he's going to throw, I believe I read, apologies, I missed the report, but I believe it was he's going to throw three innings in his next extended spring training game. And that's about the usually the point at which then you see a guy go out on a rehab assignment. And nothing would please me more if Hayden Wisniewski has two or three or four more really good outings, and then the Cubs have a tough thing to figure out when Hendricks is ready. And, you know, in the meantime, I'm excited that he had a good outing. I look forward to his next outing, and I'm heartened that the rotation does that kind of thing right now.
Yeah, I mean, you wrote it on Bleacher Nation the other day of, like, you know, knock on wood, the Cubs are healthy and we'll see what happens. And certainly there are probably ways, if they wanted to get creative with a six-man rotation, looking at the innings jump that Justin Steele would have to take to be the guy that he wants to be is pretty substantial.
He keeps pitching deep into games. Dang it, Justin, be careful. What are you doing?
Exactly. And so he's obviously another kind of underrated part of this. Like, he's so kind of quiet and efficient, and his progress has been so incremental over the years that I think we're looking up now and being like, wow, this guy's one of the better pitchers in the National League, period.
I have to jump in, because that's such a great point that I hadn't thought of and hadn't crystallized, that part of the reason he doesn't stand out maybe nationally too as being, he's been like the second best starting pitcher in baseball going back to June, is because his progress has been so incremental through the minors, and then sort of starting out as a reliever in the big leagues, some success, some not, and then going back down and then coming back up as a starter and not really having success but getting a little bit better. Perfectly put. He's a great case of just like getting a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better.
Yeah, another writer had made this point a couple of years ago as a skeptical analysis of the Cubs' pitching infrastructure. I think there's some weight to it of, like, when you think about great young pitchers, it's Doc Gooden or Kerry Wood just like bursting upon the scene. Like, they're, and this is not at all statistically.
Mason Miller, who the Cubs saw.
Yeah, nothing statistically based, but like, I'd be curious to know like how many pitchers have had that kind of Justin Steele path to where it has been so incremental and to reach the ceiling that he's approaching right now. Because you think of just like the now stuff that pops, and then the guy gets injured and they try to come back. I mean, even Kyle Hendricks, when he came up, like, he was locked in. Like, he knew what he was doing. He had amazing composure. And Justin Steele, you know, I'm told, has learned a lot from Kyle over the years. And so, you know, these are good problems to have. These are problems that good teams have. And the Cubs, I think, are reaching that stage where they've at least given themselves a cushion for when some of these bad things happen. But otherwise, just kind of looking up and down, like, looking at the Mets rotation, how old and creaky that looks right now, and struggling to adjust to the rule changes. The Cubs don't seem to have that. They seem to have adapted pretty well to the new rules changes. They've stayed extremely healthy. We talked about this last week. Their division, while surprising in how it's kind of laid out thus far, it doesn't have the Tampa Bay Rays or team spending like the Yankees. And, like, you know, once you get through this section of the schedule, it eases up a bit. And then, you know, we'll see the next time they go out to California. I think that'll be another interesting check, too, of San Diego, Anaheim, and San Francisco. That's past Memorial Day. That's the point where there is enough kind of data to start making some judgments and picking some lanes and maybe making some of those calls to Iowa as needed.
Yeah, and allocating scouting resources on the buy or sell side. And, you know, that's a good point. And that is sort of the mental cutoff for a lot of these conversations is that sort of late May is when the schedule finally starts to turn. I mean, that's another reason, by the way, that it was so great that the Cubs swept the A's, because this is one of the very few soft pockets in their schedule until after May. And they've built up a nice little buffer, and I think I'm going to work hard to keep that in mind, if they can, you know, float around 500 through May and they still don't give us, you know, tremendous reasons for pause. Like, things don't start to emerge where we're like, oh, okay, that was fake, or that was smoke and mirrors. I'm going to feel pretty good. And I have a feeling the organization will too, because for all of the comfort that some developed with the idea that they're in sell mode. I truly believe they do not want to sell this year. I mean, they really, I think the Ian Happ extension was just sort of an exclamation point on this idea that they're not looking to just curate tradable assets right now. They want to establish a baseline of competitiveness this year, even if they didn't see this year as like a all out, you know, we're really going for it year. I think the years ahead, they do want to see it that way, and it's got to start somewhere. And so I think that's why I talk a lot about just be competitive through the trade deadline. And I'm not saying, I don't mean, and then fall
and then
off.
Lose 11 games I'm not, in a row.
And then lose, yeah, like, no. I just mean, for me as a fan, and so I suspect for lots of other fans, we just want to feel like the Cubs are still in that conversation in July. Like, you know, when Shohei Ohtani hits the trade market as a rental, which he might, it would be nice if the Cubs are at least in a position at that point to like, huh, well, what if the Cubs went after him, and how pricey would that be is for just 2 months of Ohtani? And then what happens? Like, it just would be nice to have those conversations and not have it be like, you know, you're saying it out of one side of your mouth and the other you're like, but yeah, right. Yes, I look ahead to that.
I think that's crazy. I don't see a scenario in which
Which part?
Trading for
trades
Ohtani.
For a rent. Oh no. Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because now we have teed up two or three more months of being able to dig into that. I do think I actually think there's a pretty decent chance that they would potentially pursue, depending on, I mean, there's a ton that could change between now and then, but I have a feeling that potentially the Cubs will have the kind of system pieces that you'd be able to put together the right offer for a rental Ohtani. But a whole lot is going to have to go in a very specific direction between now and July for that to actually come to fruition. But not the least of which is they're going to have to know from ownership that they're going to be able to make a very serious effort to extend him after that. Because as I think you were suggesting, I don't necessarily see them spending the capital that would be necessary just for 2 months of him knowing, yeah, but then we're bowing out after that. Because that would probably not be a great approach.
Yeah,
That's my olive branch, Mooney. Take it. Grab it.
We sort of agree here that it almost certainly won't happen. And that
I wouldn't bet. I mean, I'm not like, giving it great odds as of today.
I think what I'm interested to see is, like, the Cubs for so many years have followed the Red Sox as, you know, for ideas and inspiration and personnel. And the absolute worst scenario from, this is what a Cubs person explained to me, was what the Red Sox did last year. They went over the luxury tax. They weren't quite buyers. They weren't quite sellers. They immediately did tank in August after making some of those moves. It was just kind of like a wasted season. And, you know, Jed Hoyer has clearly shown that he would sell tomorrow if he thought that was the best thing for the Cubs' long-term future. I have absolutely no doubt about that. But I agree with you in that I don't think he wants to. I think it will be a really hard conversation to have with ownership of this is what we're doing. And as much as Tom Ricketts takes the long-term view and lets his baseball people make baseball decisions, I do think that's a much harder thing to say now unless the Cubs make it really clear. And I think what we're talking about here is Bellinger. If he keeps playing this way, we're talking about Stroman, because everyone should be assuming that he's going to opt out. There's no reason to think that he's going to opt in for next season as long as he's healthy. The annual bullpen sell-off. And then you have basically what they did with Efros and Wisniewski last year. Like, there are moves that could be made that are not as dramatically defined as buyer or seller, that you can, you know, trade from a strength to improve a weakness, and have both teams kind of have an eye on the future. So, I mean, that is the fascinating conversation. Like, that is kind of where this season ultimately will be defined, even though this has been a nice start and certainly given them some positive momentum. Like, you know, they will show us with their actions more than tell us how good things are going.
Yeah, and like we said, the next 6 weeks or so are going to be probably disproportionately important to the conversation that will come a month later, you know, because they've got to stay afloat through this tougher part of the schedule. Speaking of which, back to a tough part of the schedule this weekend at Wrigley. The Dodgers come in for four, and the Cubs will look to continue to perform at a competitive level. And, you know, I would just say, again, going into the series, I'd like to see them look competitive. You know, it worked before for me to say that, and so I'll just say that again. No other expectations specifically on the outcome of this series. This is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That's Patrick Mooney. You can get his at The Athletic. And after that Dodgers series, we will be back at you on Monday for your latest look at the Cubs. Take care, folks.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.